Here's something worth thinking about before your next mountain crossing. You're in a naturally aspirated trainer, full fuel load, a route that takes you over a pass at 13,500 feet. You have done this before, you feel fine, the air is clear, the GPS is locked on course, and somewhere around the third waypoint you realize you have been staring at the moving map for a while without really reading it. The numbers are there, you just stopped processing them. That feeling has a name, and there is a federal regulation specifically designed to prevent it from getting worse. I am Pattern, and you're on Traffic Pattern here on Radio Hangar. Today we are going to walk through Federal Aviation Regulation 91.211, the Supplemental Oxygen Rule, because it is one of those regulations that pilots think they know until the examiner asks a precise question and the answer comes out fuzzy. Before we get into it, quick word about AviationSoul.com. They make challenge coins for pilots at every step of the journey. First solo, private, instrument, commercial, each milestone has a coin. It is a great way to mark the moments that actually mean something in this training. Check them out at aviationsoul.com. So, why does this regulation exist? Understanding the why makes the numbers stick far better than any mnemonic, and it changes the way you think about altitude planning for the rest of your flying career. Here's what happens when you climb. As altitude increases, atmospheric pressure drops. Not the percentage of oxygen in the air, that stays right around 21% all the way up through the stratosphere. What changes is the partial pressure at which those oxygen molecules get pushed across the membrane from your lungs into your bloodstream. Your body depends on that pressure differential to move oxygen into circulation. When pressure falls, the transfer becomes less efficient. Your blood oxygen saturation starts to drop. And your brain, which consumes roughly 20% of your body's total oxygen supply, even though it represents only about 2% of your body weight, starts to get rationed. This is hypoxia, specifically hypoxic hypoxia. And the part that makes it genuinely dangerous is that mild hypoxia does not feel bad. There is an early euphoric phase where pilots describe feeling sharp, confident, even comfortable. Some describe a pleasant fuzzy warmth. Meanwhile, judgment, fine motor coordination, and the ability to recognize that anything is wrong at all are quietly degrading beneath the surface. The Federal Aviation Administration wrote FAR 91.211 to put hard numbers around the altitude thresholds where that degradation becomes a real operational risk. Let's walk through the three levels. The first threshold is 12,500 feet mean sea level, or MSL, for unpressurized aircraft. The kind most student pilots train in, cabin altitude, is the same as aircraft altitude, so 12,500 MSL is the number you are watching on the altimeter. Below 12,500 feet MSL, no supplemental oxygen is required by regulation. For most general aviation flying in the lower 48 states, most of the time you operate well below that, above 12,500 feet up to and including 14,000 feet, required crew members must use supplemental oxygen for any portion of the flight lasting more than 30 minutes at those altitudes. Here's where pilots get tripped up on the written and in the oral. The 30-minute rule is not a countdown that resets when you use oxygen for a moment. The regulation says, if you're going to be at an altitude between 12,500 and 14,000 feet for a continuous period of more than 30 minutes, required crew members must use supplemental oxygen throughout that entire period. If you're crossing a mountain pass at 13,500 and you're back below 12,500 within 20 minutes, you are legal without oxygen for that crossing. If you are cruising at 13,500 for a two-hour leg across the Rockies, the oxygen goes on before the first 30 minutes runs out, and it stays on for the entire time you're in that altitude band. The 30-minute window exists because the FAA and aerospace medicine researchers determined that the cognitive effects of mild hypoxia in the 12,500 to 14,000 range are manageable for short exposures, but become a meaningful impairment risk as time extends. 30 minutes is the line. It is conservative enough to protect you without making every mountain crossing in a Cessna 172 a logistics nightmare. A practical question comes up here. How do you track it? In flight, especially when you're busy with navigation, weather, and communications, it is easy to lose track of exactly when you climbed above 12,500. The answer is simple. If you're planning a route that will keep you in that band for more than 30 minutes, make the decision on the ground. Decide before you depart that you're carrying oxygen and using it. Do not leave it to an in-flight calculation you will have to perform while mildly hypoxic. The second threshold is cleaner, above 14,000 feet MSL. There is no 30-minute window here. From the moment you cross 14,001 foot, required crew members must use supplemental oxygen continuously for every minute spent at that altitude or higher. The physiology justifies the sharper line. Above 14,000 feet, even brief, unprotected exposure begins to produce measurable impairment. At 14,000 feet, time of useful consciousness, the time before a pilot becomes unable to take corrective action is generally estimated at 30 minutes or more. That sounds like a lot, but it shrinks fast as you go higher. At 18,000 feet, time of useful consciousness drops to around 20 to 30 minutes. At 25,000 feet, you're looking at 3 to 5 minutes. The FAA is drawing a conservative line below the range where the numbers get truly dangerous for most student pilots and unpressurized trainers. 14,000 feet is around or above the aircraft's service ceiling. But not always, and for commercial and instrument pilots, for anyone doing mountain flying, for anyone flying in the Western United States, this is a real number that shows up in real flight planning. The third threshold is the one that surprises people on exams. Above 15,000 feet MSL, every occupant of the aircraft must be provided with supplemental oxygen, not just the required crew members, everyone on board. Notice the specific word in the regulation provided. The rule does not say passengers must use the oxygen. It says you must make it available to them. A passenger can legally decline to breathe from the mask, but you are required to have an oxygen source for each person on the airplane and to provide it. If you're flying three passengers at 15,500 feet in an unpressurized aircraft, all three of them need an oxygen source available to them. That is an equipment planning requirement, not just a pre-flight thought. There is an important nuance for pressurized aircraft. FAR 91.211 applies to cabin pressure altitude, not to the aircraft's indicated altitude above sea level. A pressurized turboprop might be flying at 23,000 feet, while the cabin is pressurized to 7,000 feet. The oxygen rules are based on that 7,000-foot cabin altitude, which is well below any threshold. This is the engineering value of pressurization. If the pressurization system fails, cabin altitude rises and the oxygen rules snap into effect at whatever the cabin altitude climbs to. For student pilots and unpressurized trainers, cabin altitude and aircraft altitude are the same number. There is no ambiguity. Your altimeter tells you exactly where you stand relative to each threshold. Let me give the three levels one more clean pass, because the examiner will ask for them precisely. 12,500 to 14,000 feet, MSL. Required crew members must use supplemental oxygen for any continuous flight time at those altitudes exceeding 30 minutes. Above 14,000 feet, MSL, required crew members must use supplemental oxygen at all times. Above 15,000 feet MSL, every occupant must be provided supplemental oxygen. The airman certification standards for private pilot include knowledge of FAR 91.211. During your oral, the examiner may ask you to walk through the thresholds. They may also ask about the difference between use and provided, because that distinction is written into the regulation and it matters. They may ask you to describe a scenario and tell them what the oxygen requirements are. What catches students is imprecision. Above 12.5 you need oxygen is not a complete answer. Above 12.5 for more than 30 minutes required crew must use oxygen is. For your written exam, watch for questions that swap the altitudes or flip the 30-minute rule. Those are common trap constructions. Know each threshold cold. Here is a realistic planning scenario that puts all of this together. You're flying from Albuquerque to Salt Lake City in a Cessna 172 with two passengers. Your planned cruise altitude is 11,500 feet. At that altitude, you're below 12.5, no supplemental oxygen required. 3 hours across the high desert, legally no oxygen needed. You should still be monitoring how you feel, staying hydrated, watching for subtle changes in alertness, but you are within the regulation. Now you decide to go up to 13,000 for smoother air. The clock starts. You have 30 minutes before the crew requirement activates. If this is a 2.5-hour leg, you need supplemental oxygen for the crew well before the 30-minute window closes. And you need to be using it for the entire remaining time at that altitude. What about your passengers? At 13,000, they are not required to have oxygen available. But push to 15,500 to clear a cloud layer, and that changes immediately. Every person on the airplane needs an oxygen source. Two passengers means two additional oxygen supplies ready to go. You can see how a routing decision, a few thousand feet of altitude adjustment made for comfort or terrain clearance, changes your equipment requirements before you ever start the engine. The practical answer for pilots who do any high-altitude flying is to own a portable aviation oxygen system. Manufacturers like Mountain High and Aerox make portable units that are not prohibitively expensive relative to what you spend on training and fuel. A pulse demand system with a cannula for lower altitude cruise use and a mask for higher altitude work covers most scenarios a general aviation pilot will encounter. You can also rent oxygen systems from some FBOs in mountain flying country. But owning one means you always have it available, you know how it works, and you're not making a last-minute call at the fuel pump. If you do any meaningful high-altitude flying, a pulse oximeter is worth having in the flight bag. It is a small clip-on sensor for your fingertip. It reads blood oxygen saturation in real time. Normal saturation at sea level runs from 96 to 99%. As you climb, watch that number. Anything in the low 90s is worth paying attention to. Below 90%, you're dealing with a real physiological situation and you need to descend or get on supplemental oxygen immediately. The oximeter gives you objective data at a moment when your subjective feeling, which tends toward "I'm fine," is becoming increasingly unreliable. Here is something I wish someone had told me when I was training. The thresholds in this regulation are floors, not targets. 12,500 feet is not the altitude where hypoxia begins. It is the altitude where the FAA decided the risk is significant enough to require action. Some individuals show measurable cognitive degradation closer to 10,000 or 11,000 feet, particularly if they are fatigued, dehydrated, or had any alcohol within the past day. The 30-minute rule above 12.5 is not a guarantee that you are fully sharp for the first 29 minutes. It is a regulatory minimum. Airline crews and military pilots breathe supplemental oxygen at altitudes well below the legal requirements because they know the performance difference is real and measurable. You can make the same choice. Nothing in FAR 91.211 prevents you from using oxygen at any altitude. It only specifies when you must your judgment, as pilot in command can always go beyond the minimum. That is the piece the regulation does not say directly, but that every experienced high-altitude pilot understands. The rule tells you the floor. How much margin you want above that floor is a decision you get to make. The primary source for this segment is FAR 91.211 itself, alongside Chapter 17 of the FAA's Pilot's Handbook of Aeronautical Knowledge, which covers aeromedical factors in real depth. Both are worth reading before any flight that takes you above 10,000 feet. More at radiohangar.com. I'm Pattern. Stay sharp up there.